Alright, you're tuned in to the news on Enemy Combatant Radio, broadcasting from San Francisco Bay Area Indie Media, www.enemycombatantradio.net, and we'll be back on in a couple minutes with news headlines for Monday, July 11th, 2005. You can reach us here in the studio at 415-864-1006. Once again, this is the news on Enemy Combatant Radio, and we have a whole mess of news headlines to bring to you today. Also in the studio is Christina.
And Mark.
And also Halima. So, do we have the same step here, or should I start off with my page?
Go for it.
Okay, well, first off, CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, recently passed through the U.S. Senate and is now moving to the House of Representatives for a vote. If passed, CAFTA would expand NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, to include six Latin American countries, Honduras, the Dominican Republic, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Guatemala, and El Salvador. According to In Defense of Animals, if passed, CAFTA would open protected waters to commercial fishers and would endanger critical wildlife habitats throughout the region. Moreover, the free trade agreements would also affect national sovereignty, allowing countries to sue one another to override laws that protect natural resources or ban environmental toxins on the grounds that such laws are barriers to free trade. The House of Representatives is expected to vote on CAFTA sometime this month.
In Sacramento, on July 6, over 200 immigrants and supporters convened on the state capitol to demand driver's license without special markings to undocumented residents and to oppose border vigilantes in California. They met inside with State Senator Jill Cedillo and then held a press conference at the steps of the Capitol while a group of up to 10 citizens practiced civil disobedience at the governor's office. State Bill SB 60, introduced by State Senator Jill Cedillo, awaits a hearing later this summer, and we'll have more news. We'll be doing an interview with one of the people who was arrested in Sacramento later on.
Excellent.
In the newscast.
Okay, well, media workers and union organizers with the Pressman's Local 4 rallied at the Chronicle in San Francisco today to protest the Hearst Corporation and their newly proposed union contract. Union workers say the new contract will outsource work, have non-union employees doing union work, will dramatically reduce wages, reduce or eliminate each union's jurisdiction. Local 4 claims they face pay cuts to $10 an hour, an increase in workloads, a contract that includes a no-strike, no-solidarity, and no-sympathy clause preventing future solidarity union actions. Boo, hiss, Hearst.
Let's see. Border Patrol arrests two humanitarian activists in Arizona. In Arizona, the humanitarian group No More Deaths is holding an emergency press conference today following the arrest of two of its members. The group offers food and medical assistance to undocumented migrants who cross from Mexico into Arizona via the desert. On Saturday, Border Patrol agents arrested two members of the group as they were driving three migrants, including a 13-year-old boy, to a local hospital for medical care. The two volunteers were charged with the felony of transporting an undocumented person and obstruction of justice. Last month, the group said it helped rescue 175 migrants in distress in the desert. Since October, it is estimated that 151 migrants have died while crossing the U.S.-Mexico border.
In Watsonville, California, the Pajaro Valley Unified School District Board of Trustees voted in favor to increase student and family awareness of the opt-out choice, which parents have to deny military recruiters access to private student information. The Board of Trustees finally approved the motion to include the opt-out choice on the mandatory emergency card for all high school students, and this measure passed by only 4-3 margin. Section 9528 of the 2001 No Child Left Behind Act requires high school administrators to release student contact information to military recruiters. Students and parents may opt out of the information release list, but notification of this option is almost non-existent. School administrators, parents, and students are beginning to find ways to counter this breach of privacy. In Berkeley, there is an opt-in policy, and other districts like San Francisco have adopted resolutions regarding the military's new access to students' private information.
And all over Scotland, disorganizations as varied as grassroots networks Dissent and the largely conservative coalition Make Poverty History protested against the 2005 G8 summit in Glenisdale. The reasons were as varied as forms to express disagreement, from marching in blockades, from clowning to filming, from talking to direct action. Although police from all over the UK were busy containing protesters in pens, arresting and searching and holding them under Section 60, discontent with the G8 agenda was voiced in many significant places and eventually supported by international solidarity. Around 100 demonstrators in Edinburgh's Sutton Prison on Friday, the 8th of July, showed their support for the arrested during and around the G8 demos, including those still in the Sutton jail itself. At least 7 prisoners from the carnival for full enjoyment are still behind bars there, plus probably more from later protests.
A British newspaper has obtained a secret plan written by the British Defense Secretary, which appears to outline plans for the Allied forces to withdraw the majority of its troops from Iraq by early next year. The memo states, quote, emerging U.S. plans assume 14 out of 18 provinces could be handed back over to Iraqi control by early 2006, allowing a reduction in Allied troops from 176,000 down to 66,000. The Washington Post reports the British memo is apparently the first time such a significant reduction has been outlined under a specific timetable. After the memo was leaked, British Defense Secretary John Reid tried to downplay its significance. He said no decisions on the future force posture of UK forces have been taken.
Dennis marks strongest Atlantic hurricane in July in 150 years. Over a million residents living near the Gulf of Mexico were forced to flee their homes this weekend to escape Hurricane Dennis. The hurricane killed at least 32 people in Cuba and Haiti, but weakened considerably before it hit the Florida region on Sunday. Some 600,000 houses remain without power, mostly in Florida and Alabama. Dennis is the strongest Atlantic Ocean hurricane to form in July since records began over 150 years ago. This comes as more scientists are making a link between climate change and hurricanes. Last month, the National Center for Atmospheric Research released a report that determined hurricanes will become more intense as the temperatures of the oceans increases and as the amount of atmospheric moisture grows due to climate change. Alrighty, pump up those SUVs, Schwarzenegger.
And the Independent of London is reporting that at least four mosques have been set on fire and that three other mosques have been attacked since the bombings on Thursday. In South London, five white men were arrested after throwing bottles at the windows of a Sikh temple.
And on similar notes, here back at home in the U.S., anarchist action was largely involved in the anti-G8 summit protests here in San Francisco.
And we had hours of call-ins live here on Enemy Combatant Radio Friday night in case you weren't able to listen. And we have actually, there's about 4 or 5 hours of audio archives available on the IndieBay site if you have any interest in listening to all of the call-in reports that we received here. But does anybody want to give a synopsis of
how many people were arrested during the rally?
That's what I was going to ask. You know, I don't have the most recent legal update, but it was definitely
20?
Under 10 arrests.
Oh, under 10.
But I don't want to give an incorrect number. And as far as I know, there's still one John Doe still in custody right now. And so
who faces charges?
I don't know exactly what charges they face. We might want to call up the NLG and see if anyone there is willing to talk. But basically, there has been the formation of a legal support collective, which is organized to help provide legal support for not only John Doe, but the other folks who have already been released. They are facing charges including assault on an officer and things like that. So these are felony charges, and they had a bail of $300,000. And so this legal support collective is working out of the National Lawyers Guild office here in San Francisco. Their number is 415-285-1011 in case you have a report as an eyewitness to Friday's protest or if you were arrested yourself.
Also, I think they're charged with assault on an officer because an officer had his head split open.
Right. There were photographs of this incident posted to indie media sites and also relayed on the corporate media airwaves, but basically there was an injured officer, and that kind of took over most of the headlines in the media over the weekend. Unfortunately, they seem to kind of lose the message of the G8 and the fact that this was actually an anti-G8 protest. Also, they didn't mention the injured protesters, I guess because there wasn't quite as graphic an image of those injuries.
And what were those injuries?
Well, basically the police attacked the protesters with billy clubs, and so we did receive reports of that, although I'm not sure if anyone was actually hospitalized.
And there was also a number of vandalism that took place on established corporate buildings in the area of the protest.
Right, and there were some complaints from the community that this was what might have been construed as an attack on the community, but I think the consensus amongst the protesters was that these corporations and their, you know, the Wells Fargo Bank and so forth shouldn't be considered part of the community. They're basically outposts of corporate America, which are invading communities. Then there were also complaints about the general trashing of the neighborhood in terms of just kind of garbage that had been, like, knocked over and strewn about the streets. So definitely there were complaints from people who live in the Mission. But then again, there's generally a lot of trash all over the streets after any kind of street event, like a street festival or anything like that. So
also, protesters did take note that no small local businesses were harmed during the actions, that they specifically targeted multinationals.
Right. And from what I heard, some protesters did have to be reminded not to spend their evening smashing up the small businesses. But luckily those reminders went out, so that's probably a good thing. But basically there's actually been a lot of videos posted to IndieBay.org today, and they probably don't really sound all that great, so we're not going to play them on the radio, but you can kind of have your own eyewitness view of what happened Friday night by clicking over to IndieBay.org, and there's just a couple new videos posted in the last hour, 2 hours or so. So you might want to check those out, including the smoking cop car, which was actually just a smoke bomb tossed under a cop car.
So I think we're going to take a break soon.
Sure, and we'll be back. We have a couple guests lined up, so should we give a preview what's coming up?
Well, let's see. We have Angel Herrera from St. Peter's Housing Committee, which is a part of the Deporte INS, Deporte La Inmigra coalition. And they're going to talk about this past Wednesday's actions, July 6th in Sacramento, about the arrests, the civil disobedience that took place in protest of Senate Bill 60, which was introduced by State Senator Jill Estadillo, and it proposes to offer undocumented immigrants licenses. However, those driver's licenses have a special marking for immigrants who cannot prove they have permanent residency with the federal government. So immigrants and immigration rights advocates went to Sacramento to protest. And so we're going to talk about Senate Bill 60, what's going on with the increased brown scare, I like to call it, here in California, with Governor Schwarzenegger supporting the Minutemen Project and a number of other anti-immigration bills, immigrants rights advocates would say. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to go into the entertainment calendar for this week. So stay tuned, and here's some tunes. Are back, and you just heard from Apocalyptic Justice off their album Dub Infusion. Before that, we heard from Government Issue with Sheer Terror, and Systemic Wide with Zion Train. For our break in between the evening news, this is Christina. I'm back, and on the phone we have Angel with the St. Peter's Housing Committee. Angel, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Christina.
Right on. And so tell me, what do you do? Tell me, like, the group you're with, a little bit about your group and what you specifically do there.
Well, St. Peter's is a tenant advocacy organization that deals with rights for folks in Frisco who live in the Mission District predominantly, but we deal with all people in San Francisco, and we basically give representation for evictions and also repairs in the building when landlords are either trying to evict people unfairly or not repairing the building in order for it to be inhabitable.
Okay. And so now St. Peter's is also, and what do you do for St. Peter's?
Well, for St. Peter's right now, I'm actually just got there. I'm on a 2-month temporary staffing internship where I'm doing more media work with them and also learning how to do community organizing, because they also do pro-rights immigrant work, where they organize and basically advocate for folks in their community who are being harassed by police or being harassed by the ICE, which is the IN, which was before the INS. We have our coalition, which is called Deporten la Migra, which actually had an action in April in Arizona, where we went down to Arizona and mobilized and had a press conference and denounced the Minutemen Project. So it's a little bit of what they do and what I'm doing with them now.
All right. And So tell me, what happened on July 6th? Now, the Deporta la Migra, the INS, is a wide coalition of various groups, right? And St. Peter's Housing Committee is one of those groups, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it comes out of St. Peter's Housing Committee. Our staff basically runs the facilitation of the process and the campaign strategy part. But it's very, very different, various members that come from all different organizations, and we all kind of collectively build our powers together. And we're also actually on the 6th, the Driver's License Coalition of San Francisco, which is an affiliation with La Raza Centro Legal of the Mission, is an organization that is going to be joining us in Deporta la Migra, hopefully, to kind of combine our forces and combine our organizers together to create one solid front of a coalition to continue our work. And on Wednesday, the Driver's License Coalition of San Francisco, with the support of other immigrants' rights and local Frisco community orgs, held a press conference in front of the State Capitol building in Sacramento, where our basic demand was that immigrants who work in this country get unmarked licenses, and also to force Governor Schwarzenegger to withdraw his support of the U.S. Border Hate Groups, which is the Minutemen Project, from coming to San Diego in September.
Okay, so they're coming to the California border.
Yeah, they're going to be coming to the California border in September due to Governor Schwarzenegger's request.
And so what happened at the Sacramento State Building? Now, there were some arrests as well. I mean, there was a press conference, and there was also some civil disobedience, right?
Which yeah, there was a peaceful protest in front of the governor's office where 10 of us got arrested. And we basically just had a peaceful demonstration where we sat down and blocked the governor's office and protested and chanted basically what our demands were, that we were there for driver's licenses for our community and to say no to the Minutemen Project and to U.S. border hate groups.
All right. And so what happened? Now you and 10 other people were arrested. What happened during the arrest?
Well, we chanted for maybe about half an hour, and once the police told us that we were under arrest, we all, non-resisting, got up, allowed ourselves to be handcuffed, and were walked outside. And from outside, there were television cameras around, like Channel 14 was around, so they were kind of documenting everything. And the Highway State Patrol, who were the folks that arrested us at front of the governor's office, basically brought us outside and changed our handcuffs and made it, I guess, just got themselves together because they didn't know what they were doing for a minute. And then they brought us into a room in the State Capitol room, 120, I think it was, and collected all our information, all our data, and also patted us down and collected all our property. After that, we were taken into a paddy wagon, which we were then driven to the Sacramento County Jail, where we were booked and arrested. And we were there. The whole group got out in, like, maybe two or three batches, and I was the last of the guys out of the group to get out, and I got out around 5 a.m., and one of the last women, who was Jill, got out maybe a half an hour after I did. So we were in Sacramento maybe until like around 5:30.
So now you experienced a certain level of aggression while you were getting arrested, right? There was some police brutality that occurred. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. I think the police officers were a little bit intimidated with my height. And also the fact of when they are booking you, they ask you if you are gay or not. And I think they don't know how to take that. So what ended up happening was, while he was right before he was about to put me in the cell and like do my final pat down and bring me into the holding area, he was talking to me in my left ear and I couldn't hear that well. So I put my head back just to tell him that I couldn't hear him and I needed him to speak a little bit louder. And he gave me kind of like this eye contact and just slammed me into the wall in front of myself. Which at that point, after that, he took my left arm and bent it backwards and then put it straight up, where my arm was like completely like in the opposite direction. And then his partner, who was with him, commenced to take my right arm and then basically slammed me into the glass wall that was next to it. They got me on my knees until the point where they dragged me, maybe I would say about 3 yards back and forth, to where they took my picture, and then they brought me backwards in the opposite direction of which they had dragged me originally, and brought me into a cell. And when they were bringing me into the cell, they basically kneed me in my back, to get me on my knees and was trying to, like, you know, slam the rest of my body on the floor and really kind of mess up my face at that point, which I was like, oh, my God, like, this guy's really out for me. I didn't know what to do, and I was also in a lot of pain. So I was able to at least tell him, you know, that I had been on camera, and, like, you know, if he had left me marks in my face, it probably would have gotten back to him so that he should rethink it. And it was so hard because there were, like, tears coming out of my eyes from so much pain. As well as they were kept questioning me every, like, 10 minutes or so if I was a homosexual, and they would say, you know, well, that figure is because I was in pain and I was screaming, you know, for them to let me go. As well as when I was in the cell, it was right across from where they were, and they were making, like, different homophobic remarks, like faggot, and kind of simulating as if they were being taken in the back by another man, and also, you know, making fun of the protesters and the folks in the community who were out there speaking their voices.
Okay. So you guys all did this and in response to the Brown Scare, is what I like to call it, Schwarzenegger's new attack on Mexican immigrants, and his support for the Minutemen, and for his support for Senate Bill 60, right, which has been introduced to the state Senate by a Latino himself.
Yeah, by Senator Cedillo. The community actually had a meeting with Senator Cedillo, which was covered by most press, Channel 14 again. They were all kind of all over the place, where community residents were actually able to talk to him and explain to them why they were there and what having a marked license meant to them. What the bill offers is a license with a mark that would identify the person as somebody who is not recognized federally by the government as a resident of the U.S. or whatnot. And that would basically make it easier for police officers when they are arresting folks, like, let's say, in San Francisco, to violate sanctuary laws and be able to communicate easier with ICE, which is what used to be the INS.
Which is now the Bureau on Information and Customs Enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Immigration. So, okay. So Senate, so it does offer driver's licenses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does offer a driver's license, but it's also not something that we're even sure they're going to be passing. But it offers a license with a mark on it, which identifies the person, and it's kind of like branding a person as if they were a piece of property rather than an actual person. And I think it's forgotten that immigrant labor in this community is a big part. Immigrant workers are being criminalized by the government and the state legislature for behavior that is normal of any laborer in the U.S., you know, violating their human rights by branding them with these marked licenses. And it's also stopping working parents and students from living equally in this country, continuing the exploitation of these people of color, you know, as is done in the third world countries that they're coming from.
So, like, what are the ramifications of having a driver's license with a special marking that says you're not federally recognized to be a resident of California?
I think when you're thinking about the systemic racism that's incorporated into, like, let's say the Sheriff's Department or the Highway Patrol, which are run mostly by, you know, white older men, it makes it easier for them to avoid things like the sanctuary laws in San Francisco, where it protects folks who are undocumented to be able to run around that and deport people against the law, basically. It makes it just easier for them to target people and make their lives, you know, much worse. Like, intimidation tactics are part of it. Violence is part of it. There's so much. It's such a big...
So it's like another form of racial profiling.
Exactly.
On a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the St. Peter's Housing Committee's response to Senate Bill 60 being introduced by a Latino?
It's hard. I think the general community response was that, one of our local organizers from Power Book, who's also affiliated with St. Peter's, named Nora, actually asked Senator Cedillo how would he feel as a Latino man if he was offered an unmarked license, and she was met with no response. So that can basically let you know a little bit of you know, where he's at. He just really doesn't, I think, identify with the community anymore to be able to have, I think, the cultural competency to really create an effective bill which is fair for the Latinos in this community who are working hard.
So what would you guys like to see happen?
Well, we're definitely demanding that we get licenses that reflect the same licenses that any other laborer or worker or person in California get. Getting a marked license is kind of not an option. It's not something that is fair, and it's not something that's equal.
Okay. And so now what is your response to Schwarzenegger's support of the Minutemen? So they're coming in September. What do you guys think about that?
Well, we're very much in against that right now, and we are going to continue to mobilize against his support of them. We want him to withdraw his support. We want him to publicly apologize, I think, even to the community, and make sure that he recognizes that we are a part of this community because we do contribute to the economy.
Okay, good deal. And so what do you think about the whole, just the whole, I don't want to say attack, but, like, what do you think about the whole hype on immigration that's going on right now? We've got the Minutemen, SB 60, you know, then all these other deals that are going on. You know, Schwarzenegger made a comment, I think, a couple months ago, how, you know, he talked kind of rudely about the state of Mexico and Mexicans. And so, I mean, what's St. Peter Housing Committee's response to the whole hype on immigration right now?
I can give more of my response as one of the members of the committee of the coalition, where I feel, and hopefully I represent most of my other co-members, you know, and folks that I work with. But I feel that it is just the perpetuation of xenophobia that is happening in the U.S., I think nationwide and also on the West Coast a lot, to use kind of fear tactics to make people scared so that people are not really seeing the realities of the communities that they're talking about and that they're targeting, and also kind of lumping us in and marginalizing us with that of terrorists when we are communities who are trying to come to build better lives for ourselves and for our families and for our children.
Uh-huh. So I see that, like, perhaps Schwarzenegger's trying to get more votes by using some sort of scare tactics, that immigration's really bad and there's a crisis going on in California, much of the Bush scheme that he tried to pull with the war in Iraq. There's terror going on, and trying to really terrorize, scare people into complacency.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that perhaps Schwarzenegger's trying to do this with immigration.
Definitely. And I think it's just coming from the top of the system. I think it's not only Schwarzenegger. I think there are other, you know, governors and elected officials who are following the head command right now in the Bush office, which is that if we keep the country scared, then people won't ask us questions and they're going to support us on what we're doing and not question our war, quote-unquote, war on terror or what's happening in the world. And I think that Americans and folks on the West Coast and East Coast, in the Midwest and the North and the South, need to really get the realities of what our country is about.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I think also to add on to that, I think that, you know, the Mexican-American community is definitely a force to be reckoned with, especially in California. And, you know, while Schwarzenegger may be attempting to create a sense of fear and unify his Republican Party, he might be really alienating a lot of people from the Republican and the, you know, the swing voters.
Definitely.
It's
definitely a force to be reckoned with. We had about 200 community members come to our press conference all the way from San Francisco and also some from San Diego, and it was a mobilization which was forceful and also a good representation of our community. There were day laborers there. There were domestic workers there. There were coalitions of women organizations. There was the Chinese Progressive Association showed up and brought a couple of its members, Filipinos for Affirmative Action. So it's like the Mexican-American or the Mexican immigrant community is really also reaching out to other communities and immigrant communities to build a coalition to really fight the reforms and the policies that Governor Schwarzenegger is trying to put in right now.
All right. And so what are your next plans? How are you going to ante it up?
Our next plans are to continue to develop our campaign and start to, I think, break down what is going on regionally and start to mobilize more and do more mobilization and direct action work.
All right. Any last comments? We're going to wrap it up here.
Definitely. I'd like to thank you for your time. And if there's anything else or if you ever want to talk again, you know how to reach me.
All right. Thanks, Angel.
All right.
That was just Angel from the St. Peter's Housing Committee, who spoke with us here at Indie Media at Enemy Combatant Radio's audio project of Indie Bay about the Brown Scare and the events and the protests that occurred in response to Schwarzenegger's part of the Minutemen, the vigilantes at the Arizona-Mexico border that are soon to hit California's border with Mexico here in September. So there's a rally in response to that, and also Schwarzenegger's support for Senate Bill 60, which was introduced by Mexican-American Jill Cedillo, which would offer undocumented immigrants driver's licenses with a special marking to easily identify them, which Mexican-Americans are opposed to. There was 200 people or so gathered in front of Sacramento Capitol State Building to protest that and hold civil disobedience. Angel from the St. Peter's Housing Committee was arrested during that protest. And that brings us up to a break here. We're going to play some NBC with Palm Skin Mix, and then we're going to come back with the weekly calendar.
What if the President of the United States, the mayor of New York, said, you know what, we're going to rebuild those two towers because...
I will not work there.
Pardon me?
I will never work there.
You'll never work there again?
No, never will I work in a prime United States terrorism target.
Members of the citizens
is waiting for the queue in the Oval Office. The president is waiting for the queue in. Pictures of airplanes flying in buildings. Fires burning.
fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me.
All right, this is Enemy Combatant Radio, and one thing that we didn't mention during our initial news headlines is the news that came out that about Rick Delgado. Now, Rick Delgado is a radio producer who was fired from Hot 97 in New York City for producing and airing an explicitly anti-Asian and racist song about the tsunami victims. And now the Clear Channel Corporation has hired Rick Delgado to produce the morning show at the local, quote, hip-hop station, Wild 94.9. Rick Delgado started work today, Monday, July 11th. Now, this isn't really too surprising because 2 years ago, Michael Savage was fired from MSNBC for his racist anti-gay remarks, and Clear Channel's 9:10 a.m. KNU, also in the Bay Area, picked up Michael Savage. So for some reason it seems that the Bay Area corporate radio stations are attracting all of the most racist and homophobic and otherwise generally evil corporate scum radio hosts. And so a lot of local groups are organizing already. Media Alliance has more information on this. That's media-alliance.org. You can fill out a form which you can email to Media Alliance to get involved in this campaign and to express your displeasure to Clear Channel. I believe that their broadcast license is up for renewal this fall. That only happens every certain number of years for each radio station, so this fall will be an opportunity to flood Clear Channel and the FCC with some negative listener response, which might not really cure the problem, but at least might soothe some of the symptoms of it. Also, DavyD.com or DavyD.org, one or the other. DavyD's website also has information on this. And coming up, Halima actually could talk about this if we have time, but we also have to get to our activist community calendar, so
I'll just talk about it for 1 minute.
Okay.
It's important to note that Clear Channel and a lot of the people who are producers, heads of Clear Channel, David D. gave an interesting speech at a media conference earlier this year where he talked about a lot of these people at Clear Channel are middle-aged white males who don't know who know absolutely nothing about urban youth and that program these stations. A lot of the people that deal with these stations and these negative stereotypes about women and negative stereotypes about hip-hop music and promote these things within young people know absolutely nothing about hip-hop. They know nothing about hip-hop and they know nothing about urban youth, and yet Clear Channel is programming a lot of things and continues to hire within itself these people who are incredibly racist and bizarre. The latest in this incident with Clear Channel is and Hot 97 is that now Lil Kim, who is a rap artist, a lot of people don't know who Lil Kim is. She does a lot of racy, raunchy rap, and she is now has been convicted by a grand jury. Well, she's been convicted of lying to a grand jury about a shooting that happened at Hot 97. I believe last year or 2 years ago, some people from rival rap crews had a little altercation inside of Hot 97, and one person was shot, and she lied about it. But this is the lifestyle that Clear Channel, a bunch of men who are in their mid-50s who know nothing about hip-hop, are promoting to the young people. So it would be interesting to note and kind of take note that this is not the first time that Clear Channel continues to promote this false lifestyle from people who are not living it. So they're making money off of our youth. So it would be good if people could kind of support this person not being in the Bay Area. So,
if anybody is going to organize a protest against Clear Channel, make sure you let me know, because I'll be out there. I hate those bastards. And, you know, I might even participate in the protest this time. Usually I just cover the protests, but...
All right.
I'll have to ramp things up a little bit.
Well, with that said, should we go into the calendar?
Yeah.
The calendar. So, who wants to start? Does anybody want to start with tomorrow, Tuesday, July 12th? Since I have it in my hand, I'll just go ahead and start. Help lower the voting age. There will be a protest to support Bill ACA-17, which is currently being considered by some local cities and by the state of California. It would allow 17-year-olds to vote in the primary if they would be 18 by the general election. They're going to meet outside of the downtown Berkeley BART at 1 p.m., and that is on Tuesday, July the 12th. So that will be another great way to empower youth to take control of matters, take things into their own hands. If anybody else is to continue.
All right. Let's see. Also, I don't even know what all this stuff is, but at AK Press, there's an event. It's called The Master's Tools, How the Government Manipulates the Legal System to Suppress Dissent. In recent months, the federal government has escalated its campaign to disrupt, scapegoat, and isolate targeted communities by using grand juries and FBI intimidation. This is going to be a discussion on standing up to government repression, and you can find out how a grand jury operates, what your rights are, and how local folks are resisting this abuse of power. This is Tuesday the 12th at 7 p.m. at AKA Press Warehouse, 674A 23rd Street in Oakland. And you can read more at FBIWitchHunt.com.
This Thursday also, there's going to be a protest at the UC in front of UCSF, 513 Parnassus Avenue in San Francisco. And this is to join the fight against animal experimentation at the University of California. This is at 10:30 this Thursday the 14th. It's from 10:30 to 11, and it says that University of California laboratories routinely perform cruel experiments on primates and on many other species. Rhesus monkeys are confined to restraint chairs with electrodes inserted into their brains, and restraining bars literally bolted to their skulls, etc., etc., etc. Need we say more? That's Thursday, 10:30 a.m., UCSF. 513 Parnassus Avenue.
And kind of jumping back, we're going to go back and forth in the week, forward in time, back in time. On Wednesday, July the 13th in San Francisco, Candace Taylor will conduct a walkthrough of her photo exhibit, Career Waitresses, Rethinking Work and Identity. Taylor is a cultural critic, writer, and visual artist who received her master's from California College for the Arts and Visual Criticism Program in 2002. For this project, she traveled over 5,000 miles throughout America to document career waitresses ages 50 to 84 who have been working in the same restaurant for up to 55 years and have become respected, trusted, and loved by their communities. And this is going to be at City Hall on the lower level at 5:30 p.m. And that's in San Francisco on July 13th.
All right. Coming up this weekend on the 16th at noon, the L. Baker Center Books Not Bars and Let's Get Free is putting on the 4th annual Not Down with the Lockdown. This is a hip-hop show and rally to close the California Youth Authority youth prisons. That's going to be at Frank Ogawa Plaza, 14th Street and Broadway in downtown Oakland, and that's noon to 2 p.m. this Saturday.
And on this Saturday and Sunday, the Crucible in the East Bay in Oakland is having a fire arts festival. For those in the art world interested in fire, art and performance. This is going to be a merging of fire art and performance. A number of artists will be there. For more info, you can go to thecrucible.org. This is Friday from 8 to midnight and Saturday from 8 to midnight. Aspara, Capacitor, Copper Lantern, Fire Theater, the Coven Fire Troupe. There's also a fire group called Enemy Combatant Dance Theater.
All right.
All right. Enemy Combatant Radio here over the airwaves. And they're formerly known as the Infinite Chaos Theater, and they've been exploring the fusion of dance theater, contact, improv, and fire arts since 01. And on Sunday, F-Space will be performing their extreme experimental pyro-industrial art punk rock. Yeah, that'll be Sunday at the Crucible. And both days, tickets each day are $25. And there will also be poi spinners, and it's going to be an interesting weekend of fire art. $25 this Friday and Saturday, 8 to midnight, at the Crucible.
And on the 16th, you can hear Sheila Provencher speak of her experiences living and working in an ordinary Baghdad neighborhood for more than a year, outside the heavily fortified Green Zone. Sheila has found that people in the U.S. are hungry for stories about everyday life in Iraq. What is really happening? What is it like to live in a regular neighborhood in Baghdad? What do the Iraqi people think about the presence of U.S. troops? Is reconstruction happening? And what is the solution to this conflict? This is free and donations are accepted. It will be held at 1140 Cooper Street in Palo Alto at the First Presbyterian Church of Palo Alto. And that is at 2 p.m. on the 16th.
And I think that about wraps it up for this week's newscast here on Indie Bay's audio project, EnemyCombatantRadio.net, also broadcast on 87.9 FM Pirate Cat Radio in the Mission and 104.9 FM in the East Bay.
And Pirate Cat Radio is supposed to be upping its power to 1,000 watts, which is, as far as I know, like, pretty unheard of for a pirate radio station in the U.S., but actually not that uncommon outside of the U.S. So I guess, you know, we're finally reaching third world standards as far as pirate radio goes.
Okay.
All right.
But we're still the leader. We're still the leaders in prison, the prison industry complex and prison abuse.
Yeah. So I guess the pirate radio is starting to catch up with that.
Oh, good. I was worried about that. Now I feel a little bit more comfortable.
Thanks for listening, and we want to give credit to those people who posted their news on Indie Bay, which contribute greatly to our weekly newscast. And remember to be the media and post your news on indiebay.org. This is Christina signing off.
And tune in next week, Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. We're going to be speaking with someone from the Women's Community Clinic.